Welcome back, Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. Jacob Rudner, joined by Jeff Ponce again. We had such a good time the first time. We're doing it again. Jeff joining me to break down week one. It's officially college baseball season. We are a weekend in. We are a rankings in. We have updated our top 25, which brings me to this. If you are not yet a subscriber at baseballamerica.com, I would strongly encourage you to do so. We are flooding the website right now with college content, from Carlos Collazo's Draft Buzz piece that he put up this morning, which is chock full of college guys that we saw over the weekend together in Arlington. Jeff, you put out a series, or you're starting your series on baseball data standouts from the college ranks after getting the first batch of data in. That's a great read, and I strongly encourage everybody to check that out. I have a breakdown of where we landed with our top 25 teams, the decisions that we made in great detail. I felt like that was something that we were missing last year and is now in the fold on our content plan for the rest of the season. It'll come out every Tuesday. And so again, if you are not a subscriber, that's baseballamerica.com, baseballamerica.com/college. If you just want our college specific content. Jeff, how are you doing before we get into this? And college guy, college Jeff, what did you think of opening weekend? You were pretty locked in.
Yeah, it was a blast. I think every year it's kind of the, at least for me, it's the real official kickoff of baseball season, is competitive games that matter. We're kind of, and I said this to JJ yesterday, we're kind of in this like fake spring training period right now until we start to play real games against other major league organizations. So right now, I think, you know, you're seeing real teams. You're seeing all the top prospects. You're getting your Friday, Saturday night, Sunday night starters. You know, you're seeing guys that took big steps forward from their freshman to their sophomore year. You're seeing guys that have leveled up going into their draft eligible year. And yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's just kind of sitting there on a Friday afternoon and, you know, just kind of cruising around to different games. Could see 12 or 13 teams, you know, ranked teams in a few hours, taking some starts. And that was kind of, at least for me, having come off of the 30 pitchers that I wrote up last week, kind of diving into some of the top names in the different conferences. That was a real point of emphasis to me, was to kind of, you know, now look at how much these guys have changed in an offseason since, you know, the video and the data that I last evaluated them with. That was fun. So it was great to see, you know, Ryan McPherson get the opening night start. Of course, Jackson Flora was a big deal. And then numerous other names, even some guys, you know, that were off the list, and a couple that I'm sure we'll talk about that you saw out in Arlington.
No doubt.
So great weekend.
And great weekend. It was a lot of fun. We had opening weekend upsets. There were five on opening night, top 25 teams dropping games. We had some great series. UCSB versus Southern Miss, which you just mentioned, was an exciting opening weekend series. One thing I will say before we even get into this podcast, if you're not streaming your games in the year 2026, what are you doing? Start streaming your games. Don't like seeing that when there's no stream of a college game. And I felt like the college podcast was a good platform for me to jump on and just say, what are you doing? Stream your games.
Even midweeks, like I want to see the midweek guys go, especially with 100%. Some of these bigger programs. Like the first time I saw Jack Leiter out of high school, I think was on a Tuesday or a Wednesday midweek game for Vanderbilt in 2020 prior to the shutdown. So all that stuff, like I want to see all those games, especially with these big teams where there's, you know, top prospects still playing in games and some meaningful games midweek. I mean, granted, the matchups typically aren't premier, but I know at least around here with, you know, some of the bigger schools like a BC will play a UMass, they'll play UConn. And, you know, those BC UConn games are typically pretty good, even in the midweek.
No doubt. And I'll also say this, you know, last year, if it was any indication, and I'm sure it'll be the case this year, one of the more fun nights of the week was Tuesday. You lock in on the screen and it's like, last year, Portland has a starter go out there and throw a perfect game on a Tuesday night. That's not happening over the weekend. And if it does, it's extremely rare. Tuesdays are the nights of chaos. I feel like we see things that you don't really get to see throughout the season. And so again, we want to see it at Baseball America, and the fans want to see it. So stream your games, figure it out. If you don't have a stream, is my opening message. Let's get into it. This week, like I said, we did our first in-season top 25 that came out on the site at Baseball America yesterday. Pretty chalk across the board. A lot of teams kind of stayed where we had them in the preseason rankings. We were very intentional about that. Don't want to change too much just off of a three-game look. We had conviction in what we did in the preseason. We did make some adjustments. That will happen every week. I don't know that we've ever in the history of Baseball America had a poll that didn't have a newcomer or have some teams move around. So you can expect to see movement. But again, week one is this weird balancing act of, do you have the teams kind of stay put because it's only three games? Do you make bigger adjustments because you kind of have a sample size, even if it's little, that isn't based on projection alone, and we have some data to go off of that allows us to make changes? One area where that was really important for us this week was right at the top. Number one, UCLA enters the season as the number one team. I'll plug this too. If you don't have the magazine, our preseason preview magazine of college, you can get that over at baseballamerica.com, and I'd strongly encourage you to do so. But UCLA was the number one team. Rock Chalowski, their shortstop, is our number one prospect. He was the cover athlete on the college preview magazine, and there was a reason for that. It's one of the most experienced teams in the country. They were in Omaha last year. They bring back a lot of the production from that group, and then they go 2-1 on opening weekend against UC San Diego. They dropped their series finale 8-7. They won their first two games, but not necessarily as convincingly as I think you'd like to see. And meanwhile, LSU, which opened its season at home against Milwaukee out of the Horizon League, swept in dominant fashion and looked outstanding. And it raised the question for us at BA of who should be the week two, the first in-season poll, number one team. Jeff, you said LSU was your number one team. Myself and the other voters in our poll said UCLA. That's ultimately where we landed. And I'm curious from you, why LSU? Why did you want to make the change so fast?
I mean, I was LSU preseason as well. I just think it's the best team in the country. You know, I think you know, granted it was Tennessee Tech this weekend, but they did what they were supposed to do. They dominated. The pitching staff set a weekend strikeout record for, you know, one of the most talented college programs in history. I think they're locked and loaded to compete for another natty. And, you know, I do understand the UCLA perspective being in a weaker conference. So it's going to be a weaker schedule. There's a good chance that they are, you know, the number one going into the tournament. And I know that is, you know, what our, you know, in terms of like our approach and our mentality, that does weigh heavy. So I understand it. I think for me, and I love to be the contrarian a little bit too, like you'll see that in all my rankings. I just think this is the best team in the country. I think you look at the lineup. I think you look at the quality of the bullpen, the starting rotation. Other teams may have particular groups that are a little bit better. I don't think everybody has the top to bottom depth of roster that LSU does. And, you know, not to say that Savage hasn't been there before, but we know Jay Johnson knows how to win a title.
There's no doubt. And to your point, the pitching was outstanding for LSU over the weekend. I think for me, it came down to who each team played. UC San Diego is not a team that we think is going to win the Big West. We're not even convinced that they're going to be a tournament team out of the Big West, but that's a good league. UC San Diego is solid. They showed that they had talent. We think that they'll be competitive within that league, which also includes Cal Poly, UC Santa Barbara, which we think is very good, and we're going to talk about here in a little bit. UC Irvine, which was a tournament team last year and is reasonably consistently in that postseason mix. They have some prospects on that team too. And then you have the San Diego squad that maybe isn't as prospect heavy, but they're good. I mean, their center fielder, Michael Crossland, hit two home runs on Sunday, propelled them to that 8-7 win. It was an impressive showing by a solid team. And for us, what we ultimately landed on was we had this entire preseason of conviction of UCLA is the best team in the country. And I will recognize right now, the margin between 1 and 2 for us was razor thin. I mean, it was a debate up until we sent the magazine to print on who was going to be the number one team in the country. And we decided ultimately that sheer returning quality, like in terms of how much you bring back from a proven, productive team, mattered a lot to us, because returning talent in college baseball these days is rare. UCLA is the national leader in the category. And like I said, I don't know that one weekend is enough to change my mind on anything, really. I think that you can prove yourself on opening weekend. Like, well, you know, one thing we'll get into here in a bit is NC State, which we didn't rank before the season, jumps into the poll from unranked to 19th. Huge jump after just two games. They didn't even get to play their full weekend because of rain in Puerto Rico. But we knew going into the year that that was a team that was really close to the top 25. And had we ranked them before the season, I think that it would have been justified. That was more, to me, course correction than it is changing our mind on something. Like, we knew that NC State belonged potentially in the rankings. We knew that Texas A&M and Kentucky, the other two teams that jumped into our poll after the first week, were really close. To me, the fact that we made a, you know, you want to call it a big change, the fact that we made a big change was a result of previous conviction being married with three games of results, which made it easy for us to be like, these are the teams that need to get into the poll, and this is how we're going to course correct after week one. I don't think that either result, whether it was UC San Diego's win on Sunday, but they still lost the series to UCLA, or LSU beating up a Milwaukee team that, quite frankly, is not going to compete most likely for a tournament spot. They were 11 games under 500 last year. They were three games over 500 in the Horizon League, which is not a particularly strong league. We expect Wright State to again be the dominant team in that conference. They were really good looking this weekend at Georgia, even though they lost two of those three games. They won on Sunday, or excuse me, on Saturday night at the second end of a doubleheader. The weight to me of who each team played mattered, and I don't know that week one is enough to make the change. Plus, I'll add this, there's going to be definitive results this upcoming weekend because UCLA plays host to number 8 TCU. UCLA loses that series, we will have a new number one team.
And I think at the end of the day, that was sort of what I was hanging my hat on, that it was like, if they don't take care of business against TCU, who I would say is one of the more surging teams coming out of the first weekend, that not that we didn't think they were, you know, one of the top teams in the country, but I think, you know, based on the impressions of you and other people that were there in Arlington, they're arguably a top five team, maybe, or yeah, pushing toward that, just in terms of talent and, you know, what they have in that rotation. And then obviously a lot of talent positionally as well. So that's going to be a challenge for UCLA, and it might even be, I'd have to pull up their schedule, it might even be their toughest series of the year.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I would say so. And I would also say that, you know, one thing that matters to me when I make poll considerations is this. There's so much runway left. We've done nothing. We're 3/55ths of the way through the regular season. And so when there's debate this early, to me at least, and if you don't play somebody big especially, just err on the side of what we thought before. I think that that's kind of the prevailing wisdom for me. You'll see that if you read my piece on exactly why we landed on each thing, where I'll explain things a lot more thoroughly. It was an easy debate in my mind. I considered LSU. I think I was actually the one who brought it to the table of, hey, do we need to make a change at number one? But the reality, again, is like, three games is three games. And as J.J. Cooper, our managing editor, put it, and I really like this, the margin is razor thin on a one-run loss versus a one-run victory on a Sunday. It is the wackiest day of the weekend. Your pitching is depleted. This early in the season, you're still kind of trying to figure things out. And so I would err on the side of, this is the conviction we had before the year. We thought that UCLA was very narrowly the best team in the country. We're sticking with that for one more week. And like I said, UCLA is going to either prove it or lose it this week. If they win this series against TCU, to me, they are clearly the team that belongs at number one. You lose that series, and I think that you have to re-earn that number one spot in the rankings, and we'll make that change. And it just didn't feel necessary to me, which is the word that I kind of go back to, whether or not the change was necessary after opening weekend. It does bring me to this, though. TCU, like you said, excellent weekend. They went out to the Shriner College Showdown in Arlington, Texas at Globe Life Field, and they were outstanding. They secured two ranked wins. They played three ranked opponents. They were the only team in the country to play three ranked games to start their season. Their only loss was to a team we're going to talk about here in a few minutes in Oklahoma that we thought before the season was a top 20 team. And now, I mean, on this trajectory, if they can really continue to do this, especially on the pitching side, I think Oklahoma is like a top 10 team probably, just with how good they looked. That's not a bad loss to me. And TCU, I thought, was really impressive. Noah Franco was the Big 12 player of the week. He had some two-way success, obviously a very powerful hitter, but he threw three no-hit innings to close out a game against Arkansas and looked great doing it. He was up to 98 miles per hour. He's a huge big league looking sweeper. I think the takeaway for a lot of evaluators was, hey, maybe this guy needs to be a pitcher full time. It was that good. Sawyer Strohsnyder, I think, justified a lot of our preseason hype in that he was really good looking, hit the ball hard all weekend. Lucas Franco, the younger Franco, played third base for TCU and hit the ball hard all weekend. That was a loud showing to me, even at 2-1, with a run rule loss, I'll add. That was a loud showing from a good team.
Yeah, and I think, you know, knowing that there is another arm in there that is as dangerous as Franco is, and we'll see role-wise, you know, if he gets stretched out or not. This is a fairly deep pitching staff to begin with. I think Tommy Lepore is, you know, one of the 10 best starters in the country at the moment. He's athletic, pitches well, there's power there. And I think he's a pretty good pro prospect as well. Probably a guy that could move up on our rankings over the next couple of weeks to months. You mix in Franco and you still got guys like, you know, Lance Davis, Brassfield, Baumler. There's plenty of arms. And then you mix in the bats with Strohsnyder, Brunson, and then, you know, Lucas Franco, who had a big weekend as well. He's a 28, correct, Lucas Franco? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure on the dates, birthdays, etc. So, I mean, they have interesting prospects, frankly, multiple interesting prospects from every class as well. So even if you're just watching these games as like a draft nick or a prospect, you know, hound, I think TCU is like one of the teams you really got to hone in on, tune into and watch, because it's a really, really talented roster. And it might even be a little bit better than we thought coming into the year. And we weren't low on TCU.
Number nine. Yeah. Number nine coming into the year. And I'll say this too, like one of the things that I think is exciting always about finally getting out to the ballpark and seeing teams and watching them play, aside from just the results, which matter more than anything, the physicality that you get to kind of witness in person, and you get to see, man, this team has a lot of behemoth individuals. I feel like TCU might win the, wow, that team has a lot of behemoth individuals race. That is one of the most physical teams in the country. I mean, every single guy that they trot out there on the mound, at the plate, it didn't matter. Like, we're talking 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", with these big muscular builds. That matters, I think, early in the season from a prospect standpoint, of course. Like, when we evaluate guys and where they should rank in our top 200 or eventually our top 500, the physicality will, of course, play a role in that. But when a team goes out there and they look the part and they get off the bus and it's like, that team is going to be good, that's always exciting too. And I think TCU pretty emphatically checks that box.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. It's the getting off the bus. I'm glad you used that term, but the getting off the bus test. Like, you know, that team comes off the bus and immediately it's like there's multiple guys who are like, oh, crap. Right. This looks like a football team, you know. I'm sure it's the same with Tennessee when Blaine Brown gets off the bus.
Yep. Blaine Brown, you mentioned, was one of our national team of the week. I didn't even plug that at the beginning of the show. Starting this year, we're doing a national team of the week, basically recognizing the top performers. We thought it was something that was lacking last year. Just a more holistic approach at the top performances in the country. This weekend, there were some extremely loud ones. Tyce Armstrong, probably the loudest over at Baylor. The Baylor first baseman hit 3 grand slams on opening night. He became the second player in the history of college baseball to do it in the first in 50 years. I'll add this. There's never been a player at the major league level who's done that. There's only been one team that's hit 3 grand slams in a game. It's the Yankees. And that was back with like the A-Rod crew in the early 2000s. Russell Martin was still on that team. And teams don't just do that. He did it by himself in one game. So a whole list of very loud performances on opening weekend, one of which belonged to Cam Johnson at Oklahoma, who is somebody, at least in my view, who's been in the draft spotlight for some time now. He was a loud prep name coming out of high school. It's kind of struggled so far in his college career. And then on Friday night, he comes out and was tremendous. He struck out 11 batters, which was a career high, over 6 innings. He allowed 3 hits, didn't allow an earned run throughout the game. And that Oklahoma team, and you actually wrote about a couple of these guys in your data standouts piece, LJ Mercurius in particular, Camden Johnson, another one. Really good looking weekend for some of these Oklahoma prospects. I think that that's a team, like I said earlier, where if everything continues to click, they might just jump all the way up into the top 10. And I'm not saying that happens fast. You need to prove it. And one weekend is not going to do that for us. But they were the largest rising team among our preseason ranked squads. They went from 19 to 15, sweeping the weekend. It was a loud sweep. They run rule TCU in their series finale. I don't know that there was a program in the country among ranked teams that had a louder weekend than Oklahoma.
Now, that was the best. That was the most dominant weekend. When you consider the difficulty of schedule, and then they turned around and played another game on Monday. So they're one of the few 4-0 teams alongside LSU, I think atop the SEC right now. But I think with Oklahoma too, like when you're rolling out Cam Johnson and he looks the way he looked on Friday night, and then you're rolling out Mercurius after that, and you have maybe not an offense that's stacked with like first round, second round type of hitters, at least for the next couple of classes. They do have some 28 names and like Blair and Rager, who are a big deal. But you're rolling on an offense that can put up runs, can score, and I think this weekend proved they can hang with SEC caliber competition and hit those pitching staffs. This is a really dangerous team. I think coming out of the weekend, even more so than TCU and beating TCU to cap off Sunday certainly helped that. I think this is the team that you look at and you say top 10, maybe even top 5 if things continue to trend in the direction they're trending. And a big part of that is that pitching staff was, you know, I talked about it at the top of the show. You see guys, you evaluate them a year before, what they looked like in the previous spring. Maybe you get some information about, you know, summer and fall and all that sort of stuff, and you do great work on that. Still getting out into the games and doing it and seeing a performance like Johnson and Curious, we couldn't prepare for that. You know, we couldn't be ready to be like, oh, they're going to look as good as they possibly could look in their first start of the season. And that really sets the tone. So just from a pitching staff standpoint, and we know how important that is just in terms of eating innings and winning series, when you have that advantage in the first two games of a weekend, I look at Oklahoma as one of the most dangerous teams in the SEC now. And one that not everybody had them ranked, I believe, in the top 25, which seems kind of crazy to me at this point.
For sure. And I think that for us, the reason that we had them in the poll to start the year at number 19 was largely off of projection, because I mean, there is no denying the fact that Cam Johnson hasn't done it in college. I mean, he's struggled to throw strikes throughout his career. There's been questions about the pitch mix, about whether the off speeds were ready to play. Last year, the fastball had some dead zone characteristics, and then he looks like a new pitcher. I mean, he was around the zone. The fastball played a lot better than it has in the past. And then the interesting thing for me is the usage. He flipped the changeup and the slider usage, which I had a conversation with Skip Johnson on the field after that game. And he said the best starts Cam Johnson made in 2025 were at the beginning of the year, his first four starts. And if you go back and you look at the numbers from those games, he was also changeup heavy over the slider. That's what he did in this game. It worked great for him. When I talked to Johnson after the game, he said, I have a lot of confidence in my changeup, and this offseason kind of instilled that for me. I have better feel for it. I know that I can throw strikes better with it. And again, if he can be a staff ace, and if Mercurius can pitch, I mean, listen, if you flip the order of the pitchers that they trotted out there and you put Mercurius on Friday and Johnson on Saturday, they absolutely would have looked the part. Mercurius struck out 12 over 5 1/3, 23 strikeouts between their Friday and Saturday starters. That's loud. Last year, we thought Oklahoma was one of the best teams in the country because of Kyson Witherspoon and what he was able to do for that staff. Now you have two guys who I think have an opportunity to provide, like you said, innings, but also bat missing ability. They're both prospects in this year's draft. They're older. And that's the other thing. Age matters so much. These teams that have super junior, senior heavy lineups, like Ole Miss is another one of the teams that brings that to the table. And they look really good against a Nevada team that we kind of think is a postseason contender. That's loud. And I think that it needs to be baked into the process, which is why, like I said at the top, we didn't want to make big moves this weekend because it is just a three-game sample and you don't want to overreact. But at the same time, I do think that the eye test matters arguably more this past weekend than it does in any other weekend of the season, because you learn something. And I think that even if it's potential still, and it's not proven because it's not, Oklahoma checks the potential box as aggressively as any team in the country. So to me, that was the easiest move to make, was bump that team up into the top 15, and they'll continue to rise accordingly if they continue to perform. All right. Let's talk about this. Those two teams played in Arlington. Carlos and I got to see them in person, TCU and Oklahoma. You were at home watching games across the country. Well, who are the teams that stood out to you? Let's check some Jeff boxes here.
Yeah, I think the first one was Texas. And UC Davis is obviously not a high-level opponent. But I was interested to kind of follow that team just based on the number of transfers that came in. It was a pretty sizable transfer class. And I think we saw a couple of those guys, you know, or at least, you know, one of them and Aiden Robbins really perform. More questions, I think, about Carson Tinney and, you know, how that power is going to play ultimately. But, you know, getting an upgraded Ruger Riojas, I thought was pretty impressive. He sat 96 miles an hour. He sat 93 last year. More defined splitter. So that pitch is actually slower by about 3 miles per hour than it was last year. It has more defined splitter shape. So that thing was really playing. I want to say plus pitch, but that does seem like we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, at least above average. If we're looking at it from a major league kind of scale, it was a really good pitch. The slider or the cutter was harder as well. Then you go to Dylan Volantis on Sunday. Looked phenomenal. I think he ran a no-hitter at least until like the fifth inning. Did give up an error that was actually his own fault on a throw to first base, but was really dominant, was in and around the zone, was keeping guys off balance. Once again, it's UC Davis. You don't want to take too much away from it. But coming out there and not shooting yourself in the foot or falling into a trap game, I thought was fairly impressive. And then the other guy, I wrote about him today. I talked your ear off and everybody else's ear off about him all week. And that's Pac-Man. Anthony Pack Jr. had a huge series for Texas. Freshman at the bottom of the lineup. A guy that I don't think anybody projected that he would necessarily be in the lineup from day one and be their starting right fielder. He had a phenomenal series. Caught 4 or 5 barrels. Had a bunch of hard balls in play. Plays with his hair on fire. You know, good hit tool, a lot of contact, quality at bats. You wouldn't know that it was a freshman at the end of the lineup. It was almost, that lineup was almost reminiscent of like a Tony La Russa lineup from back in the day, where he would go with like the double leadoff hitter, and Pat kind of fit into that. And it's always fun to see a freshman in his first weekend of college baseball really driving, you know, a perennial top 25 team to victories. And he was a big part of, you know, why they went 3-0 in that series. So I thought that Texas was impressive, and they were impressive in the sense that they were guys that I was expecting to be impressed by Robbins. I was expecting to be impressed by Volantis. With Pack and like how Riojas looked, I think that puts them in a little bit of a different position. I'm probably a little bit higher than the group is at this point on Texas. I think it's a really good team. And if they can get Carson Tinney's back going, that could be a really dangerous lineup from 1 to 9. So that was one in particular that jumped out to me.
And I would say this, you know, one of the reasons that we had Texas where we did, which was 8th going into the season, was because we did have questions about kind of the surrounding cast offensively. We didn't know how the, you know, Packs and even guys like Adrian Rodriguez, who suffered an injury last year and kind of had to play through some things, how he was going to perform. There was a position change there. Ethan Mendoza, the second baseman, kind of this light hitting spark plug, homers twice, career high of homers was 5 going into the year. He's effectively halfway there after 3 games. So I think that for Texas, they started to answer the questions of how would the supporting cast offensively impact this team? And especially like, could they make enough loud contact to contend in the SEC, where you have to be able to put the ball over the wall? It doesn't really work unless you're Kentucky somehow, to play the small ball game that Kentucky's able to play. That works for one team, and it doesn't really work across the board. And I think we wanted to see whether or not some of these non-headline names in Texas lineup were able to do in that regard. And as you said, like the loud exit velocities up and down the order from the 9-hole hitter, from a freshman 9-hole hitter, that's loud. And then rotation-wise, I mean, you mentioned Riojas. Luke Harrison is a guy who Texas has a lot of confidence in and performed last year. Volantis was our freshman of the year in 2025. Now he's in the rotation after being their closer. And I mean, he took a no-hit bid into the 6th inning. So like those were loud performances. And granted, it was against UC Davis, which you have to kind of bake into the calculus as far as where you go and how much you want to shoot them up in the rankings after one weekend. But again, as far as the potential goes, like where this team could rank in a month from now or in 2 months from now, if Texas is the number one team at some point this season, it's not going to surprise any of us at Baseball America. And I think that that's the case for any team that we put in our preseason top 10. Like you put teams in the top 10 because they have a chance to be the number one team at some point. And so that, I think, was a big thing for Texas. And listen, if they're going to pitch the way that they pitched and Ruger Riojas is going to be able to show out like he did, it's going to be hard to beat those guys. Like pitching still wins at the end of the day. And that's in any conference. And I think that Texas brings that to the table in spades. Was there anybody else that you wanted to talk about that you saw?
Yeah, I only saw them for one game. Wasn't able to tune in on Sunday because the game was canceled. But, you know, NC State was another one. Went 2-0 down in Puerto Rico. They outscored their opponents 23-4. They had Seton Hall on Sunday. Had that game not gotten canceled, we might have been talking about another 10-1, 11-1 sort of performance. The pitching was good. The defense was good. The lineup was good. They were a team that was off of our top 25. And I think we all felt like they sort of emphatically announced their presence that they are a top 25 team and definitely deserve consideration. And we pushed them up into the top 20 for good reason.
And I'll just read exactly what I wrote in this breakdown story. We said entering the year that NC State was one of the teams that was closest, one of our final cuts for the preseason top 25. And after opening weekend, I have no shame in saying, I think we missed. I think that's one that we just got wrong. And that's going to happen. Like there are teams that we just won't evaluate as we probably should have as far as where they belong in the rankings. And I think that if there was one team that earned that title of the, you know, the biggest miss of our preseason top 25, it's probably NC State. That's a good lineup. Ryan Marrone is a really interesting Friday night starter, strike throwing lefty with some stuff. Jacob Duden is an interesting righty over there who I think has some potential to kind of break out. And I think that even though it was two games and you don't want to be too aggressive, and I'll keep saying that, we knew that we needed to kind of correct course there and move NC State up. I'll bring up one more team that was interesting to me this weekend. Texas A&M was not ranked before the season. I have said repeatedly, and you can find it, it's in writing. So I'm not making this up to sound cool now on the podcast, but Texas A&M for me is a top 10 team by talent, maybe even a top 5 team by talent in the country. They killed it in the portal. Chris Hacopian was the headliner from Maryland, but you got guys like Wesley Jordan from Baylor, who I think is a really talented hitter, who had some standout data last year, one of the harder hitters in the country by exit velocity. He has great angles too, really puts the ball in the air with great feel for power. You have guys like Gavin Grahovic, who didn't play at all last year because of a shoulder injury in his back. Caden Sorrell missed most of last season because of a hamstring injury and hit the ball harder than almost anybody in the country throughout this weekend. Some of the home runs that he hit were like, you know, mouth wide open type home runs where you just look at the screen. It's like, whoa.
And he had a 114 that traveled 422 estimated. Like that's goofy. And he had two 114 balls in play.
all while playing center field and being a plus runner on the base. Like he's going to steal bases this year for them. He's going to hit for power. He's got a really good feel to hit. I would go as far as to say it's a plus feel to hit. Like to me, that's a top 15 prospect in the class. And he showed it this weekend.
Yeah. And I think anytime you have, you know, Sorrell and a guy like Hacopian in the middle of that lineup, like, you know, you have some firepower that can go toe to toe with anybody in the SEC.
No doubt. And I'll say this, you know, the reason that we didn't rank Texas A&M, and this is the point I wanted to hit on, was because of last year. We put them number one overall in the country, one of the most talented teams in the nation. And then they don't make the tournament. They're the first number one team in the Baseball America poll, at least since the 1990s, to not make the NCAA tournament as a preseason number one. And so this year, our approach was basically like, let's be cautious. Let's just watch out and see what they're able to do. And I think that this year, they showed a little bit more convincingly on opening weekend that they were ready for it, that the talent was going to be not just talent, but production. Last year against Elon, it was clear like right away with Texas A&M last year, some things were not clicking. They struggled to win on opening night against Elon. I think it was a 4-3 win to open their season. Week two of the year, they drop a game to Cal Poly. And then we started to kind of scratch our heads. And it was like, maybe this super talented team is not going to do it in year one under Michael Early. I am confident enough to go on record here and say, I think this year will be very different for Texas A&M. I had said that before the year. I believe that Texas A&M is not only one of the most talented teams in the country, but it will perform like one of the most talented teams in the country. And so for now, we have cautiously slid them into the rankings at number 22. Do I think that they're going to move up? Yes, and I believe that they're going to do it in short order. Let's move this over to the player side. There were a number of players individually who stood out to us over the weekend, and none more, in my opinion, just from a pure stuff standpoint, from a who he faced standpoint, than UCSB ace Jackson Flora. It was an outstanding opening night from a stuff standpoint. The stat line's fine. He threw six shutout innings. I think he struck out four. He hit three batters in his first start of the year. That will get better over time. I'm confident in saying that that will get better over time. But the quality of the stuff, and this is where I'm going to turn it over to you because you wrote about it, was jaw-dropping. There are not a lot of pitchers in college baseball who are capable of doing with a baseball what Jackson Flora did against Southern Miss in Hattiesburg this weekend. There are going to be people who are going to argue that he's the number one prospect in this class because of it over time. What did you see from Flora? How impressive was he? And where does he kind of stack up in the individual performance category? Stat line aside, but just from a what he showed us, where does he stack up for you?
I mean, I think I think this is the number one player in the draft. That's kind of where I came out of opening weekend. Now, there was some bias toward that anyway. I'm a little more skeptical of Chalowski than others. That's not to say that I don't think he's an excellent prospect. I do. I think he's going to be a guy that's easily inside our top 15 to 20. Flora to me looks exactly like what you're going after when you're looking at, you know, the top pitcher out of college and the type of guy that can move to the big leagues within months. You know, I mean, we've seen it with Skeens. We saw it with, you know, Chase Burns and others. College starters that are this advanced move incredibly quickly. Then you kind of factor in what the pitch mix is like, the operation, the release traits, all that sort of stuff. He is really unusual. That fastball sat 97 miles per hour flat, touched 100.4 miles per hour, 2,500, 2,600 RPMs of spin. It's super efficient spin, which is one of the reasons he has a really flat vertical approach angle. It was like 4.12 degrees, which is like Jacob deGrom, Garrett Cole type of fastball traits. Nearly, you know, just under 7 feet of extension. The release height was below that magic number of 5'8". You got about 17 inches of ride and about 5 inches of arm side run, get some cut ride at times. And then you factor in the breaking stuff, and he's got two different breaking ball shapes and a cutter that's, you know, harder, 86 to 89, 90 miles an hour, 27 to 2,900 RPMs of spin, true cutter shape. He mixes in a more traditional sweeper, slider, slurve. It's got a little bit of drop, so it's a little bit more of a slurvy sweeper. That thing's got 17 to 18 inches of horizontal break at 79 to 80 miles an hour, high spin pitch. When I see a guy with release traits and spin traits like this, it typically means that there's, you know, I talked about this with JJ last week. They kind of walk into the training facility and there might be guys that are, you know, shopping in this section or this section for new pitches. They kind of open up the book with a guy like Flora, and it's like, what do you want to add? We can add a sinker. We can add the cutter. We can add a splinker. I mean, he can add sort of anything because of these unusual traits. Oh, and then by the way, you mix in a changeup that has a 2.5 degree plane separation off the fastball and changeup, about 10 miles per hour of velocity separation, tons of vertical separation. And it's almost like a splitter. I mean, that spin rate in that thing was like 1,000 RPMs. So he's able to spin breaking balls at nearly 3,000 RPMs and then ramp it down in the changeup and throw a true changeup that's, you know, almost splitterish in terms of what the RPMs on it. And then he gets behind the four-seam fastball, spins that efficiently, gets down the mound, creates weird angles, has a ton of power across his pitch mix. Like, this guy's doing a lot of things that just there aren't a lot of pitchers on earth that can do this. So I was impressed with Flora coming into the weekend. I had him, you know, somewhere in that elite group with Dax Whitney, you know, and I think you can argue he might just be the number one pitcher in college baseball at this point.
And I wouldn't surprise us at all.
And Cam Flukie, too, was in there, but Flukie did not pitch as well as Florida did.
No, and I think that the sheer stuff was actually like, and this is going to sound weird, but it was almost a question. Going into the year with Flora, we knew he was elite, but there were so many changes that we heard about over the offseason as far as what he was throwing and how he adjusted the grip on his fastball. He added that changeup that Jeff just mentioned. That's a new pitch. He was not throwing that kick changeup last year. He was kind of actually struggling to adopt a changeup grip that he liked. You mentioned like the slurvier shape. That's new. He wasn't throwing a slurve curveball last year at all. It was just straight sweeper and like a tighter slider. This year, he has all three of those pitches. So impressive in terms of being able to mix all of those in, the shapes, the spin, the athleticism, which is not even something that you hit on yet. Like the way that he moves and kind of bounces around on the mound, I think is unique for a guy who's 6'5" and throws as hard as he does. Like all of the qualities that you want to see from a top five prospect on opening weekend, I think Jackson Flora delivered. Let's talk about one more player here. Blayne Brown over at Tennessee. You mentioned him earlier at the top of the show. Four balls hit harder than 104 miles per hour. He homered three times. We were talking about this offline prior to the podcast. I think you can make an argument that it's like 70 game power, maybe 80 raw on this guy. And we saw every single ounce of that over the weekend against Nichols. I think that there's a lot to be excited about a guy, by the way, who's not eligible for this year's draft. So Tennessee will get another year out of Blayne Brown, who, oh, by the way, will start on the mound in the midweek tonight. Like he is electric, a super athletic prospect. He plays both ways. He's up to the mid 90s in the preseason. I think he was up to 97 miles per hour from the left side on the mound. And then just the raw power and the feel to hit are both really good. What stood out to you about Blayne Brown? You also wrote about him in your data write-up.
Power, man. I mean, you know, the guy had what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 balls in play. And I get foul data too. So sometimes I'll say BBE. That means there might've been like a 110 foul ball or something like that. He had that many balls in play over 100 miles an hour. Like that's absurd. Had multiple 111s, had four balls, 109 to 111.6. He had three balls above 110. Two of those were home runs. One was a single in the bottom of the first on Saturday. They played a couple of games. So, yeah, I mean, ton of extra base hits. I mean, what do you have? Four extra base hits this weekend. Another three singles or four singles. I mean, he just hit all weekend long. Not too many swinging strikes considering the type of prospect this is. And then when I was digging into him a little bit, I realized that his father was former NFL running back Chris Brown that replaced Eddie George in Tennessee. Had a 1,000-yard rushing season back in 2004, too. Random footnote. So athleticism obviously runs in the family. Yep. He's a big boy. Excited to see what he looks like on the mound. But this is a tooled-up power prospect. These are the kind of guys that get me out of bed in the morning. And I can't wait to the 27 draft because this guy's going to be way up on any rankings I do.
Let's end on this, Jeff. What's one lingering question you have coming out of opening weekend? What kind of sticks with you as something that you want to see more of?
It's a good question. You know, I think my biggest question, and this might be silly because this is such a talented team. I want to see a little bit more from Auburn. I felt like at times they kind of hung around a little bit too much in that series. They did go 3-0. They outscored their opponents 21-4. I wanted to see more from the offense. It just wasn't as loud as I thought, especially when you consider, you know, the number of prospects that are on that Auburn roster. And I think the other one is, you know, Oregon State playing an independent schedule. How are they going to hold up? You know, they had some down moments over the weekend. But, yeah, I think Auburn against Youngstown State, which, hey, it's an 80-grade hat that Youngstown State has with those Penguins. I was searching around the internet scouring where I could purchase one. So on the next college podcast I record, I could be wearing a Youngstown State hat. But, yeah, I mean, you look through this Auburn lineup, and they're as talented as anybody. Rembert, Bellew, Farber, Frelick, Terrell. plenty of pitching to back it up as well. Highly ranked. I want to see a little bit more from Auburn, especially if they're going to compete in a really loaded SEC. And, you know, we saw a couple of SEC schools really, you know, announce their presence this weekend in Oklahoma and Texas A&M. They're going to have to compete with those guys as well. Tennessee doesn't look like any slouch. Mississippi State, we haven't talked about Ole Miss. They went 3-0 as well, outscored their opponents 29-6. And then, you know, LSU and Kentucky. And we haven't gotten into Arkansas, Alabama, Florida, you know, Georgia, some of these other schools. So I'm interested to see, you know, how legitimate that 3-0 is for Auburn and how they look when we come back to this in a couple of weeks.
I will. I'll talk about Florida. You mentioned not talking about Florida yet. That's my question. I just wonder what this year is going to look like, because I think with Florida, almost unlike any other team in the country, there is this very wide gap, kind of Texas A&M like, actually, between the sheer talent on the roster. I think that going into the year, we felt as though, and he's ranked 9th to reflect it, Liam Peterson is one of the best pitchers in the country. We think that Aiden King is one of the better pitchers in the country in the 27 class. We think that Josh Rittner, their closer, is one of the better pitchers in the 27 class. The number of arms in that class that are really good. Brendan Lawson is at the moment our number one prospect in the 2027 class among college guys. And that isn't new. Florida has had tremendous talent roll through its ranks over the course of the last couple of years. But the last 2 years have been nothing short of underwhelming in the regular season. Florida has struggled to get by. They have not hosted in the last 2 years, which is rare for a team like Florida. And it feels crazy to say and kind of nitpick at that. But like, that is a thing at the University of Florida. There is a standard. And I would say that the last couple of years have not lived up to those standards. And granted, in 2024, it ended in Omaha. So like, it goes to show you that when things click at Florida, it goes really, really well. But the reality is that they don't always perform to that. And this weekend didn't do anything to make me feel confident that that wasn't going to be the case this year. I think that Florida is good in terms of talent, but you drop opening night to UAB, then you do win the next two games. It just left me wanting to see more. It's a question. The lingering question I had from opening weekend is, what is this Florida team going to look like? Because I think, like some of the other teams we've talked about in this podcast, if Florida is going to play its best baseball, it's the top five team in the country by talent. If Florida is going to play like it has in the last couple of years, though, where it doesn't throw strikes, it struggles with its ace, Liam Peterson, I think that there's a lot of fair questions to ask about whether or not this is a team that even belongs in the top 25. And that was part of the conversation that we had on Sunday night. Do we keep this team in the rankings? And we did. We have it at number 24. They were 22 going into the weekend. But I just want to see more. And I wonder about what the rest of the year will look like for the Gators. That is going to do it for this episode of the College Baseball Podcast. I will plug it one more time. Head on over to baseballamerica.com/college to check out all of our college content. We've got tons of it every single day now and through the end of the season. Lots of exciting stuff happening throughout the country. Jeff, like I said, is doing data standouts on a weekly basis. It's a great read if you're trying to get into the top prospects of this class and some guys from the next class. We are breaking down the top 25 in great detail. I've got 3,000 words up on the site just in terms of our process and how we arrived at the 25 teams that we did and in what order. And so baseballamerica.com/college. For Jeff Ponce, I'm Jacob Rudner, and we will see you next week.